Blog Talk Radio.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
My name is...
What?
My name is...
Dr. Dre.
Yeah. Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
We're almost there.
Oh, yeah. Time to get that party started, people. Let's go. Gotta get it to what they want. Yeah. I'm with it.
Never gets old. No, it does not. Again, we are officially talking sports with the 12 men. We are super, super excited to bring another edition of the 2019 version of Talking Sports with the 12 men, having a good time. As we always do, what's today's date? It's January the 15th. I feel like JQ having too much to drink here, but it's all good. It's all good, man. A lot of love, man.
So, hey.
Oh,
that's not new, man. Give us some news.
JQ's my boy. We're having a good time, man. So let's officially kick this party off as we always like to do. Really quickly, just want to give some shout-outs to you, Gary. You know, I said we're continuing giving you some thoughts and prayers for the fam, whatever's happening out there, too. So just quick little shout-out. We'll talk about that in a quick second, too, as always. But let's get this party started. Introduce my fellas, Mr. JQ. I was just throwing a small little shot, but there's a lot of love, man. How you feeling this evening, man?
Oh, man, it's all good. Like I said, I haven't gotten that Rob territory where I need to take me a nap because I'm getting old before the call. But I got me a nap here, and I'm good. And I don't know, man. I feel like I'm starting to cause some controversy in my household because my wife is a Falcons fan, but I was kind of pulling for the Saints because they got so many freaking Buckeyes and they was balling out. People were saying to me like, I don't even know you anymore. So I'm going to have to repair work in my household.
Good man. Good man. Keep rooting for the Saints, my brother.
It's no, hard. Brother, no, no.
No, she's going to still love you. Don't worry.
Rob, how you doing today, man?
Man, doing great, man. Look like my Tar Heels going to pull out a squeaker. And it look like my LSU Tigers going to have a big-time road victory tonight against the right opponent. So, doing good tonight.
But
wow,
you are. Hey, we're going to take it. He's about to come back. He's about to come around to it. We'll have some fun here. Let's throw out these numbers really quickly. If you want to reach out to your boys, the number to call the show, and we'll check in with the West Coast in a quick second here. The number to always call into the show is always the 424-243-9519. As always, once again, 424-243-9519. Follow us on Twitter at the number 12, THMAN Sports. And then last but not least, hit us up on Facebook. You can go to facebook.com/12ManSports. Or if you do Talking Sports with 12 Men, you will find us as well. And it sucks, man. I know we're going to talk about Syracuse. You know, I'm happy my Georgia Tech boys upset them, and then they end up beating Duke, man. So that's pretty dope, man, as well, too, because, you know, so I just want to throw that in there, too. So, anyway, we'll talk about some fun stuff, too, as well. But let's kick it off with the Oregon Sports Report. The Left Coast, Curtis and Gary, the floor is yours, gentlemen.
Hey, this is Gary. How you gentlemen doing today?
Good,
hope
how
all is well with you guys. I wanted to start off talking about Larry Weinberg. He was the original owner and founder of the Portland Trailblazers. He passed away at 92. The gentleman's a World War II veteran, real estate developer. He founded the Portland Trailblazers in 1970 for $3.7 million. How about that?
Wow.
He sold it out to Paul Allen.
You can't even play it that cheap anymore.
In 1988,
right?
For $70 million. I just thought I wanted to give a shout out. You know, he was the original owner, and he was the owner during the time when the Portland Trailblazers won their only championship.
77, baby.
Yeah, 76-77. You know, we talked about the Portland Trailblazers. Now
Maurice
they're on
Lucas.
A... Yeah, Maurice Lucas, Bobby Groves,
nice.
Lino Hollins, Dave Twardzik. You know, we had a good team. Bill Walton, the big redhead.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. There you go. You know, we had a two-game...
Hey, Garrett, what's your guy? Whenever they made that infamous trade for Sam Bowie, was he the owner for that fiasco or no?
Yes.
Gotcha.
I'm not sure.
Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough. No.
Yes, he was.
Yes, he was. Yes,
okay.
He was. That was before Paul.
He was. Okay, you just had to throw that out there, didn't you? Okay,
no,
I see how it's
going.
I
know. I was asking the question. I was not asking the question. I was just asking the question because, you know, that's another thing.
Thank you for drinking. Now you're taking a shot at the owner for the Sam Bowie trade.
Your turn is coming too, Rob, so it's all good. Everyone's getting shot tonight. No, I'm shocked. Go ahead.
Well, one of the things I want to talk about, and with the Portland Trailblazers, I believe, especially back when Sam Bowie came in the league, it was about the big men and having big.
Right.
They won a championship with Bill Walton, a big man, Lionel Hollins, and Maurice Lucas, which Lionel Hollins and Maurice I knew and I considered they're friends of mine. It was a big man's league,
unlike it is today.
But one of the things that bothers me and has bothered me living in Portland is Portland, over the last, I'm going to say, 15, 20 years, they've kind of went to the small guards. They try their first picks in a lot of years preceding those days were these 6'2", 6 foot. They even drafted in the first round a 5'8 point guard at a high school. I've condemned and I've never liked that their philosophy is getting guards. I can't poo-poo the Sam Bowie thing because now they're trying to do little guys.
Well, Sam Bowie's career was derailed by injuries. Ultimately, he possibly could have been a much better NBA pro if it wasn't for the injuries. I mean, I remember watching Sam Bowie at Kentucky, and he blocked almost every shot that came near him. He was a tremendous athlete in college, tremendous big man. So, obviously, his career was derailed by injuries, and it's kind of hard to predict that, you know, going into the NBA.
Yeah, 100%.
But, hey, you know, you did have Kevin Duckworth. He helped lead to the NBA Finals. You know, he had that tremendous mid-range shot to go along with Clyde Drexler, Jerome Kersey, and what was the point guard named Terry Porter. Terry Porter was on his team. So, you had Buck Williams. So, I mean, you had some teams there that went to the
Jerome
NBA
Robinson?
Finals there. For,
Was it Jerome Robinson?
Keep going.
Sacramento kind of impressed me. You know, the West is so tough. You just don't have any gimme games. I guess unless you're playing maybe Phoenix, but even Phoenix can jump up and bite you in the butt too. I mean, Sacramento played a great game yesterday, and they just, they beat us. We lost to Denver, a heartbreaker to Denver. We lost two straight now. We're still fifth in the West. The Lakers have kind of dropped down a little bit. I think they're ninth now, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they're number nine. Still two games above 500.
Sacramento's
number 10 at 2 games above 500.
Yeah. So it's a jammed up mess in the West right now. And you know, it's going to be all about matchups towards the end of the season, that always is or whatever. But, I don't think Denver's going to be that number one seed by the end of the season. That's my pick. I don't think.
No.
I think it's still going to be the Warriors. But Denver's playing some really good basketball now.
Yeah.
The Warriors just gave him a nice ass whooping tonight.
Did they? Good.
They did.
Oh, yeah.
Not that I'm a Warrior fan. I don't want you to know that. Get that straight. But the Blazers are 26-19. That's still, you know, that's still a pretty solid record, you know, approaching that halfway mark. We're happy with that. If we can do that again, we'll be okay. We will see.
But tomorrow they play Cleveland here. So that should, boy, that better be 27.
Gotta be a win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and another thing I wanted to talk about is the
Cleveland this year. He's going to play in the somewhere in the Israel League or something.
Yeah. You know, we got a project up here for a baseball stadium, and it's the Portland Diamond Project, and it's Russell Wilson and his wife are really spearheading this whole thing, and they've got a couple of other investors in it, and they've got a spot picked out down by the Willamette River. I drove you down by the Willamette River when you were at, you and your wife were in town, fairly close to where the you know, where the Blazers play at the Moda Center. So I think that if we get this baseball stadium built, it'll be it's really beautiful. Go online and look up the Diamond Project. If you're out there, you're listening in, look it up. It's a beautiful concept for the stadium. It'll have a retractable roof on it, and it's just outstanding design. It looks really nice. And, you know, the team that they're looking at, if they build this stadium, they got their eyes set on the potentially the Oakland A's. What do you guys think about that, Portland A's?
This town might be ready for a professional.
I know the
this town might
move,
be ready
I
for
know
a professional.
What's that?
What's that, Rob?
I know the Raiders are moving out of Oakland. I don't know the A's were looking to move out, too.
Yeah, but it's now, you know, they, of course, these are all things that they negotiate, and cities battle back and forth, and, you know, lots of different things have to happen. First thing that has to happen is you have to have a place to play. So they got the site picked out. They got the building design. So it looks like they're ready to go with it. So they're not going to build something that's, I don't know how many millions of dollars it is. I haven't got those figures in front of me.
You think Portland could support a major league team?
Oh, absolutely.
I do.
Absolutely. And it's growing. I mean, they say Portland within the next 5 to 7 years will have another, 500,000 to 600,000 people in this community.
You guys know what's going on in the West. California is getting more and more expensive of a state to live in. And all these Californians, where are they coming? And they have the problems with the fires, and they have the problems with the water. Guess what the Pacific Northwest offers them? Less fires, lots of water.
More rain.
And more rain.
Mm-hmm.
And cheaper mortgages, cheaper rents.
Off the weather.
Cheaper taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, if you know anything about our country, because of the expense of California, here they come.
Well, and if you look at San Diego, L.A. area, San Francisco, and Seattle, the other, you know, major cities on the market, they did the same thing with Seattle. They moved into that area, and that area is now just a metropolis, and that's exactly what they're doing with Portland. If you come here to Portland and you look at the Portland skyline, you've got buildings going up everywhere. You've got designs for almost 1,000-square-foot sky tower that they're looking at putting in. They've got all these things going on. And so the answer is absolutely yes, Portland can support another professional team.
Yeah.
very successful with the Timbers.
I think Portland and Nashville is impossible. Either sites for teams to move to or expansion. So I know Portland and Nashville is both on the Major League Baseball radar. And, I mean, you mentioned the same thing's kind of taking place in Austin, too, where that Silicon Valley tech industry, a lot of that industry is moving to Austin and it's driving up the cost of living in Austin as well. And Austin is the most expensive place to live in Texas now, even more so than Houston, Dallas, and San Antonio because of the tech industry coming from California. So that's another city that's experiencing that same thing. That's, you know, because of California and looking for somewhere a little bit more cheaper to live and things of that nature.
Yeah, but saying that's going to hurt Austin is just proximity to Dallas. But, yeah, I agree with you on Portland. You look at the way that Portland gets behind the Timbers and the way they get behind the Blazers. And the
well, and that, you know, that, you know, and,
oh,
and
yeah. Well, no. Major League Baseball is not looking at Austin, though. No, I wasn't saying that to say they were looking at yeah, no, you got the Texas Rangers and you have the Houston Astros. So, no, both of Austin kind of sits right in the middle of both. So, no, that's not taking place. But we digress. So we should move on talking to sports.
Let's do that. Good call on that, too. And I know, like I said, it's always good to hear about a lot of future developments and everything that's happening as far as how, you know, the industry is obviously adapting to sports. The last game, the Raiders were there, and I remember being in California, just the whole mood of the city was like, it was just interesting because, like, yeah, this is our last game, and it was just like a surreal moment that, you know, there was so much Raiders gear out there, and it was like, man, this is it, man. This is all the nostalgia going, I guess, with Oakland, you know. So just, you know, they didn't really care. They're like, hey, deuces, you know, because, you know, it's all about money. But it was just like, it was just surreal, to say the least. But, you know, we'll talk about
Oakland
that more.
Oakland is a dying city.
It is.
And we know the Warriors are moving to San Francisco next year too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just like I said, being there just felt like it was just an interesting moment to say the least. Because like I said, everyone's like, "Hey, this is the last time we'll see the Raiders, man." And it was interesting to say the least. But anyway, let's talk about some of this stuff, gentlemen. We got about 42 minutes here. A lot of things to dive into for this edition of Talking Sports with the 12th Man. And we're going to talk about the first preview here as far as the first game right out the gate. We have the Chiefs at the Patriots, and we're going to follow the question if the Patriots are vulnerable, and then which QB would you rather have, Brady or Mahomes? And so, obviously, the Patriots just jumped all over the Chargers, man. They didn't have it. Man, they were just like the Chargers weren't even awake. And then the Chiefs, you know, surprisingly, you know, they thought that they were going to get run on with the Colts because the Colts. This and say, you know, obviously I'm a huge Mahomes fan, but it's tough to go against the greatest, you know, supposedly of all time here with the Tom Brady, all the learnings and whatnot. So you'd probably say Brady right this juncture, but I do like the fact that what Mahomes is bringing to the table. Like I said, the second quarterback in history to throw for 50 touchdowns. The defense is vulnerable, but if you're the Patriots, you're probably going to throw some things that may surprise Mahomes. It's going to be an interesting matchup. Rob, I'll let you kind of like take the lead, and then we'll kind of pass to JQ and then the left coast as always. So go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I'm going to Chiefs in this game at home. Obviously, I just Brady, of course, continue his undefeated streak against Philip Rivers. Yeah, I like the Patriots. I'm sorry, not the Patriots. I like the Chiefs at home in this ball game. If you look at historically, Tom Brady is actually only about 500 on the road in the playoffs and hasn't been as impressive on the road in the playoffs, even from a statistical standpoint, too. So I like the Chiefs. I think they're going to be able to score points. Even though the Patriots look really sharp against the Chargers, I mean, they were at home. I still think they're vulnerable. And I actually would take, at this joint juncture of their careers, I would definitely take Pat Mahomes over Tom Brady and his versatility, the way he's able to create plays and make nothing into something. And I just think it's their time. And I think the Chiefs hosting their first, unbelievable that they're hosting their first AFC Championship game in their history. That was hard to believe. That was a shocker to me. And but I like the Chiefs in this matchup. I really do. And I'm going to go.
What, Rob, were you cutting off at the end of that, too? Did you guys hear that last part of that, or was that just me that Rob cut out?
I didn't. You've been cutting out on me, too, a little bit, Andre, so I didn't know if it was me.
Yeah, I think all of us are getting cut off some, so I don't know what's going on with the block talk. But basically what I said was I'm going with the Chiefs 31-24 at home.
Oh, man. I want to, and I was so dismayed at the way that L.A. came and showed up or didn't show up for that game against the Patriots in Foxborough. And it was really, I thought, because the defense was playing so much better. And then so much for that happening because Tom Brady and them just steamrolled that Chargers defense. I hear you, but Mahomes got banged up a little bit in that game against the Colts. He made it through it, but I wonder how healthy he's going to be. And when you talk about the half-line offense, I think it's supposed to be the coldest game ever at Arrowhead Stadium. That game kicks up, I think, at like 6-something. I believe the high of the game time is supposed to be like 10 degrees. It just gives me concern now that I've picked against Tom Brady here, and he just made me look like an idiot. I wonder if Belichick and them boys don't come up with something crazy. With him being a little nicked up and it being cold to kind of slow that Chiefs offense down. I hate to say it, but if we're talking about it, and Rob, you tell me when I go against it, if we're talking about it, I love Patrick Mahomes, but he's still really young. And you talk about Mahomes and Andy Reid versus Brady and Belichick for the right to go to the Super Bowl. I got to go with the Patriots in a barn burner. I don't think either one can slow the other team down, but I just feel like they always find a way to make one more play than the other team, especially in these kind of situations. So even though I want the Chiefs to win, Lord knows I want the Chiefs to win, I got to take the Patriots by the field goal. I think it's going to be something crazy again, like 38-35.
All right.
I would take Tom Brady for right now because Tom Brady is Tom Brady, and he sucks. And I know that, and I don't like him either. But if there's a conversation between a dude with no rings and a dude with five of them, I got to go with the dude with five.
Well, I think from us here on the West Coast, I'm speaking for myself as Gary. I like Kansas City in this one. It's gonna, you know, what's the weather gonna be like? Is it gonna be nasty? Is it gonna be nice?
10 degrees.
You know,
10 degrees is 40 degrees temperature at kickoff.
Okay, well, you know what? I like it. I like a quarterback that's mobile. I like a quarterback that's mobile, that can run, that can make stuff happen on the fly, that's not just that, you know, drop back passer like Tom Brady is. Tom Brady at this age is, you know, if it was a couple of years ago, I would say the Patriots. Right now, I think I think it's going to turn, and this is it for the Patriots, and Curtis is going to be able to text a friend of his and say it's a great day in the NFL because the Patriots are going to lose.
I hope you're right. Don't get me wrong. I hope you're 100% right. I feel like I got bit in the butt last week with it. And at some point, you also have to say these guys have been here and done that. And not a flash in the pan done it, but consistently. But this is 8th straight AFC title game for Tom Brady. Like, that's just ridiculous.
That is unbelievable.
That's why. It is. I have a hard time. Listen, I want Kansas City to win. But if I had to bet on somebody, I'll put my name on my prediction. At this point, it's like, okay, I'm going to rejoice in it and be glad for once in my life to be 100% wrong if the Chiefs win. But given the fact that we haven't talked about it a whole lot, that New England team has really developed a nice power run game with Sonny Michel. And if they can do that and get that short passing attack going, and we talked about it, the best way to win that game is to keep Mahomes on the bench. And I feel like that's going to be the game plan. And they're running the ball since last week, like Corey Dillon when they got him, when they were able to establish a strong, you know, power run game and play after pass off of it. I just don't know if Kansas City has enough horses on defense to slow him down enough to allow Mahomes to be that guy again. I would love to be wrong, but how many times do we have to see this and be like, oh, this is their demise? and then it not be their demise, and they play in another freaking Super Bowl. So I hate it, but I just can't pick against them in the championship game.
Yeah, I think the questions. There's a bunch of questions, because what is really bad here is that weather is supposed to be awful. It's going to be below zero,
6 degrees,
and that wind is blowing. And guess who that gives a favor to? If that weather is nasty, it's below zero, and that wind's blowing, that just takes away the high flying act, the speedsters that Kansas City has, and just like Rob was just now saying, they got that dink and dunk, they got that power running game, you know. But on the flip side, one of the teams that led the NFL in sacks was Kansas City. And the only way that you're going to beat the Patriots, you got to make Tom Brady, you got to beat his butt. You got to put him in the ground. You got to put some pain on Tom Brady. You got to make that man take the fight out of Tom Brady. That's the only way it's ever happened that the Patriots in this era have been beaten, because teams have been able to beat the snot out of Tom Brady, and they're going to have to do that. But my question is, the Patriots have been in many, including the Tuck Rule, blizzard, a snowplow comes out of nowhere, 3 points, right, game over. They've been in many of these games. And Patrick Mahomes, Texas, Southeastern Conference in Texas, Oklahoma, this is going to be his first inclement super big game. And the big question is how Patrick Mahomes handles that, how he handles that, how the coaching, Andy Reid, prepares him for that, and what his dad knows about being a professional athlete with all that adversity that he's going to be thrown with that weather. And if that young man, I mean, he's only going to grow from here. He's only going to get better from here, but he's going into something that he may not, you know, he may not be ready for. And that's the question I have.
All right. Yeah, that kind of follows what JQ was saying. You definitely.
Well,
it's hard
he
to
proved this past weekend that he can play in inclement weather.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too about that too. Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, well, he did prove this past weekend. And I kind of, you know, going into that game, I kind of switched my pick thinking the Colts could run the football and the Chiefs couldn't, but that proved me to be wrong. And the Chiefs didn't miss a beat in that inclement weather this past weekend against the Colts.
So
he kind of showed you a little bit that he can play in that kind of weather. And he's got a strong arm that could kind of, whip the football right through the wind and things of that nature. But it looked like it's going to be about 6 degrees on Sunday. Not getting an indication of what the wind and things of that nature is going to be like. But it's looking like 8 mile-per-hour winds. That's not too bad. I think they've proven that they can play in the inclement weather. And I think they're going to be able to do it again this week as well.
Well, here's one thing to your Kansas City sacks about them with the sacks. A lot of that comes off the fact that they get up on teams because of their high-powered offense, and the other team has to get better than the run, and they can pin their ears back and come after the opposing quarterback, and I think that's how they get a lot of the sacks generated off of what I've seen when Kansas City has played. Can they do that to New England to where they get up on them and they make them abandon that power run game and they can get after Tom Brady? That's the question, because if you don't get up on them, Kansas City has that team where they, that defense where they can be good when that offense puts them in a position to be good, and then they can kind of pin their ears back and make the team one-dimensional because they feel like, oh, my God, we got to get these 14, 21 points back in one play, even though you know they can't. But you make other teams panic. I don't think they can make that New England team panic like that. I don't think they're going to be able to slow them down early on to where they can let that offense get ahead to where they can just spin their ears back. So that, to me, you're right with the sacks as one of the pieces of it. But I think that's a stat that can be a little misleading because it comes in terms of game flow.
All right. Keep on the press. We'll see how that plays out. Like I said, it's a lot of what ifs. And like I said, I know it's early. This is a big defining moment for Patrick Mahomes. He's been putting up big numbers, so we'll see if he can put it up against the juggernaut known as the New England Patriots, if you will. All right, gentlemen. The next topic we're going to talk about is the Rams defeating the Cowboys. And this game, I think we were both – I know, Rob, we're kind of going back and forth, and we're kind of like settling which direction we're going to go because obviously we thought that defense was going to be pretty stout. But, again, the Rams, both freaking C.J. Anderson and Todd Gurley just kind of wore them down. Jared Goff did just enough. And they were able to shut down Ezekiel Elliott, if you will, which is, you know, Aaron Donald was getting it. Tlaib was shutting down freaking Tumor. I'm sorry, Cooper. I'm sorry, I'm thinking Amari Tumor. Amari Cooper. And, yeah, man, so was the defense kind of the thing? I know they were trying to get them guys hyped up, but I'm going to kind of start off with Left Coast, man, and kind of get your thoughts about that because I know you guys are Cowboys fans. And then to back it up is Jason Garrett in trouble with his loss, man? So what are your thoughts about that, gentlemen?
Well, you know, yeah, when you let two running backs, you know, go for over 100 yards a piece, you're going to be in some trouble when you give up 250 yards rushing. Absolutely.
Tired, though.
Golf's performance was, like I said, just enough. But the Rams' defense, they just came to play. The Cowboys just did not come to play. I thought Dak Prescott did what he could to keep them in it and give them somewhat of an opportunity to at least make it respectable. But overall, the Rams just manhandled them. The front four of the Rams just, you know, they just got after the Cowboys. Cowboys line has been beat up, and they were exploited, you know, and I think my hat's off to the Rams. My dad's a big Rams fan, so he was pretty happy. It's hard to watch your team when you're so invested in that team with someone else who's just as invested in the opposite team. You know, that's a rough day in the household. But you know what?
Big time.
Yeah, you know. But I do believe that as far as Jason Garrett goes, I don't think he's in jeopardy at all. I think the move that I would like to see make is get we need a new offensive coordinator. We need Lanahan out of there. I think he's so predictable. You can just about predict what they're going to do, and I think that's exactly what the Rams did. I think if I can do it watching the game, I'm positive that those professionals know what to look for, and I know that's exactly what they did. It's like it's almost like they knew what they were drawing up, and that's on the offensive coordinators.
Well, it was obvious, and I watched it, and I'm going to shout out to a Dominican Sue, who is from Portland, played his high school football here in Portland, Oregon, and I've seen him about town. I've been in certain nightclubs where Dominican Sue has been in also. I don't know him, and I haven't met him, but I've been around Dominican Sue, and he does still live here in Portland, Oregon, when he's not playing football. They got out physical, and a lot of football, and it's one of the things I love about football, and I've always loved about football, is you put your hand in the dirt, and you look at the man across from you, and you tell yourself and you convince yourself you are bigger, badder, stronger, more awesome than that guy across from you. And this is what the Rams did to the Cowboys. They decided, and Dominican Sue, Aaron Donald, that line, they decided that they were just more physical and more muscle than the Dallas offensive line. They manhandled them. And offensively, their line looked across at our front seven and they were convinced that they were more physical. They were going to hurt that offense, that defense, with beating them up every single snap. Just beat them up, beat them into the ground. And that is football. That is what I like about football. The Dallas Cowboys are Jerry Jones's team. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Jerry Jones said today that if he fired the coach, five teams would pick up Jason Garrett within 2 days. Jerry Jones believes that. And he also believes if he gets rid of Jason, who is he? But he's got a list, apparently, and I hear about this, and he, you know, it could be Lincoln Riley, it could be some of these college coaches down in Oklahoma, Texas. He's got a list of guys that if he does, he's gonna ask one of them to come and be a Cowboy. But, and I think that's the whole ball game in coaching the Cowboys. You gotta be liked by Jerry Jones. And Jerry Jones likes Jason Garrett. He does.
All right, so there you have it from the West Coast.
There it is. Okay, good analysis. Go ahead, Rob.
I mean, obviously the Cowboys couldn't stop the run in this game, which was surprising because they have been a very strong run defensive team all season long with their front four and those linebackers. And you know, the Rams just, you know, totally beat them in a different way that we didn't see coming. But most of the season, the Rams have been, you know, a good run pass balance, but the Jets, I mean, almost 80-90% of their offense came from running the football in this game with that 1-2 punch of Gurley and Anderson. And so that was definitely very surprising. So I think the Cowboys' run defense was an aberration in that game. I think defensively they look like they have a very bright future. And I think it's the right decision not to get rid of Jason Garrett. I know there are a lot of Cowboy fans that I've talked to thinks that he should be gone. But, I mean, hey, the guy started the season off 3-5, got that team to come back and win a division. I personally don't think he should be fired. That's just my opinion. And I think Jerry Jones is making the right decision in keeping him around because of the progression that team made throughout the season. You saw them get a little bit better offensively when they made the trade for Amari Cooper. So I think it's the right decision for that football team is to keep him intact. But their defense certainly failed them in that game, and Dak Prescott was very average in the game as well. And that's why, that was the reason why they lost the game.
Well, yeah, Rob, if you look at Dak Prescott this year, before Amari Cooper came on, he averaged, you know, 220 yards per game. After they got Amari Cooper, he averaged 276 or 77 yards per game. So having a weapon like that, they were talking on some of the talk radio shows, you know, about the giving up a first round pick for him, for Amari Cooper. I think that, you know, when you got a production, an increase of production like that out of a quarterback that is a manager, he's not an elite quarterback, that's a huge increase for him. So I was happy with, I'm happy with that. So our first, you know, our first round draft pick this year that we've already got, because we know what we got next year. We got a receiver that can be 1,000 yards plus receiver. He runs great routes. And he'll be, you know, he's one of those guys that's going to do the right thing. So I like our first round pick there. What's your take on that?
Well, this is JQ, and I'm going to defer to most of y'all because I was actually working a Gladiators game, but I did have it playing on my phone, and I saw the last piece of it where I only saw the numbers, and I saw Anderson and Gurley submit that game. I agree. I think it's mostly Linehan And I think I've been saying that, and I said that when I picked the game is why I picked the Rams to win the game, because I still didn't trust Dak and Linehan to do the right thing with the game on the line, which, you know, to advance in the playoffs. And I wasn't, you know, not disappointed, but they proved me to be right. And then you got to give that Rams defense front seven a lot of credit. Because if you can bottle up Ezekiel Elliott, everything is predicated off of Elliott running the ball and being able to set Dak up to do play action pass. I mean, you have, what, 20 rushing for 40-something yards, I believe is what Dak, Zeke had. It's just, that's just not going to be enough to move them backwards to open up those holes in the zone. So, tough. I can't see firing Garrett right now because I agree with you, Rob, on that. But if you're being honest and you're looking at it, you're like, you know Jason Garrett is not that guy. Now, you can't necessarily fire him after this year because you're right. After being 3-5 and turning him around and getting him, you know, to the divisional round, it's hard to fire him after that. But I think the end is coming for him because unless something changes and the offensive coordinator makes him look better, then I think he's just going to be a lame duck because I think we all look at him as not being that guy. But whoever made the decision to take the deer hunter or whatever he calls himself, the wolf hunter, Grandesh out of the game for Sean Lee in those critical junctures and Sean Lee just getting manhandled out there, I don't understand that philosophy from a defensive side. And I don't know if that was Rashard or if that came from somewhere else. But the way that dude, him and Jalen Smith have been playing in the middle of that defense all year, to pull him out, you got to stay with that dude. He helped get you there. I didn't understand that. And that 3rd and 7, Sean Lee got hung up on the block on the outside and Goff was able to get the first down and totally milked the rest of the clock. So it's a tough loss for the Cowboys, but I think changes are coming. I think they have to get rid of Linehan this year. And if I'm being honest, I think Garrett stays their number maybe next year if the coordinator doesn't make him look better.
That's a good call, John.
All right,
I like
appreciate
the
feedback.
Yeah, and Rob, did you have anything out of that, Rob, or no?
Nope, I think we covered that pretty well. And
cool.
We'll move right along.
Cool, I was just making sure. And then I'm just going to ask, you know, maybe the Cowboys, who's the Cowboys tight end, by the way?
They need
Jarwin. Top of the head. Jarwin?
Jarwin.
I mean, we don't really know. I mean, it's like, yeah, we don't really. So I think that's the one missing piece, too, because if you shut down Ezekiel, shut down Cooper, you know, you got obviously got Cole Beasley doing this thing, but you need another, someone else to kind of take some pressure off, too. Maybe, you know, you don't have Witten again. So that's a huge loss, I really feel, gentlemen. Because maybe Witten could have helped, like, get, you know, if you're targeting, you know, obviously shutting down Ezekiel, then you got, you know, obviously Cooper locked down. You have another guy that can literally take some pressure off of Dak to kind of, like, get some extra yards. So that's something to maybe think about going into next year. That's that one missing piece for the Cowboys offense to kind of help you guys out, too. Then also, like we talk about with the coordinator. But we'll move on. Just something to think about as my little, kind of like JQ, kind of like my little two cents, if you will. All right. Let's keep this going here. We're going to talk about Antonio Brown in a quick second. We got about 16 minutes here. Let's talk about the other game. And I guess let's talk about the Eagles. And I guess, is there a quarterback controversy? And I guess if you poll the Eagles fans, you're going to get different sides because, you know, one half says that Carson Wentz is the future. But you see the way Nick Foles is kind of like, I don't know if he's like this magic JQ, but for some reason, Foles just keeps winning. And now there's kind of is there a quarterback controversy as far as with Wentz? I mean, is he the starting quarterback? Is Nick Foles done? Where's he going to play? I mean, so tell me what you, so I'll let JQ start, and then we'll kick it to Rob, and then West Coast again. So go ahead, man.
Yeah, but you also got to remember that Carson Wentz is not 21 coming out. He played all 4 years, and then he's been hurt a couple of these years. So he's about 25, 26, I believe. So you're not talking about a 21-year-old quarterback and trading Carson Wentz. If I'm being honest, I think if you had to give the Eagles front office truth to them, a piece of them was a little bit glad Nick Foles lost that game. Because if Nick Foles wins that game and they go on to the NFC Championship game, then they've got a super for real quandary of what do we do at quarterback. I think Nick Foles, the first interception was bad. The second one, not so much. That was on Alshon Jeffrey. But he didn't really have the magic, so to speak. And again, it's hard to play New Orleans in the Superdome in New Orleans. But I think they got what they saw out of him. You know, he can get on these little small runs, kind of almost like a Ryan Fitzpatrick. Now, Foles did it on a bigger stage, but they can get you on a 4 or 5-game sample set and look like a world beater. And then they have that game that reminds you of this is why they bounced around the league. So if I'm the Eagles, you know, you want to win that game. Don't get me wrong. But I think they went ahead and said, okay, I think we know who he is. Carson Wentz has a higher ceiling. We're going to go with Carson Wentz. You might be able to get a bigger return for Carson Wentz if you trade him. But it's hard to trade a quarterback and then watch him go somewhere else and flourish. And Nick Foles turns into the Nick Foles before this past Super Bowl run. And now you're sitting there looking like, oh, my God, we just made a horrible decision. And we might have had Carson Wentz for 8 more years. And now we're looking for a quarterback again. So if I'm in Philadelphia, I'm disappointed. But I'm still sitting on my ring glass here. And it's like, okay, you know, if I can keep Carson Wentz healthy, he's going to be my quarterback.
No doubt about it. And I think privately, there's a portion of the Philadelphia Eagles organization that are actually happy that they lost that game, because you would have more chaos upon your hands from a quarterback controversy standpoint if they would have won that game. And the more Foles won, the more it would have been hard for them to justify to their fan base that Carson Wentz is your quarterback. And like JQ said, you know, Nick Foles, you know, has a few games to kind of show that magic, but can he do it long term? And you know, early in the season, he mentioned the same thing about Ryan Fitzpatrick. You know, he come out for a couple of games, and then all of a sudden he goes back to being Ryan Fitzpatrick that we know of. And so Foles, I think for the Eagles, I don't think he's going to be back next year. They're going to see what they can do as far as moving on and going with Carson Wentz and see what they can get for a return for him. There are going to be some quarterback teams out there that's going to need him. Certainly, you can look at possibly the Miami Dolphins. I mean, there's several teams.
First. Jacksonville.
That's probably going to be in the running for him. But I don't see Foles being back with the Eagles. I think this is where they move on and they hand the keys to Carson Wentz. And you don't have to look over his shoulder anymore. And I think that's it. They separate, like I said. I think privately, there are some people in the Eagles organization that are happy so they can move on and go with Carson Wentz.
Well, Carson Wentz, you know, he is the future of the Eagles. And I don't think it's – even if he would have won, I still don't think it would have swayed them one bit from going from Carson Wentz to, you know, going with Nick Foles instead of Carson Wentz. I just think that they know that Wentz is their future. They've been blessed with having two, you know, solid quarterbacks, and he's performed well for them. I think that, you know, if he goes with Miami, if he goes with Jacksonville or, you know, somebody like that, he'll probably do really well. I don't see him being I don't like him in the same sentence with Fitzpatrick. I think that he's a way better quarterback than Fitzpatrick is. And I think that he'll do well. But the Eagles have already kind of, you know, I was watching some of the things, some of their comments that they were making from their coaching staff, ownership, have already basically said, you know, hey, good luck to you. Well, if you're saying good luck to you, well, guess what? That's saying goodbye. So he is gone, as far as just from what I've seen watching on the NFL channel and watching different things. And I think he's going to do well somewhere else.
Well, you know, what I'm looking at here, and I think with the Eagles, it's the future, and it's also money.
Good job, Chris.
Yeah, it's money. You can't pay both of them. And, of course, nobody wants to do that. Nick Foles has proven himself to be a quarterback at a Philadelphia's price range. I like the guy. I think he's going to be successful at a good spot. So, in a way, I kind of want to see him in Denver. for personal reasons. But I think it's business. I think it's money. I think Philadelphia is on. They drafted him number one. So, they've always considered him their future. me personally, his injury history, for me, scares me off the football. It really does. Injuries scare me off the football with athletes. They do, because even when I played football, you know, and I was on teams, those guys that were always injured, they didn't do you any good, you know. And at some point, you got to move off them guys because dependability and toughness has a lot to do with football. That 1 year Brady got hurt. New England didn't make it. But, you know, when was the last time you seen Brady hurt?
You just definitely jinxed it, man. Appreciate this. Better knock on some wood here, bro. No, but, yeah, good call. Yeah. All right, so I think it's interesting. We've all talked about this. You know, Carson is going to be going someplace else. We've literally identified a couple more spots for him. But, like you said, it's probably the end of the run. And we'll see. I guess, you know, the Eagles traded up to get Carson Wentz. He's a future. So now is the time to definitely see if they're getting that investment, man, because as JQ said, he's got a higher ceiling. So we'll see. Hey, really quickly, we got about 8 minutes here. I do want to talk really briefly about Antonio Brown, where he's going to land. You've been hearing the Twitter universe or little things like that. I guess I don't know why he's saying he wants to go to San Francisco is what I've been hearing. Rob, I'll let you take that. And then, you know, the same order with JQ and the West Coast on the fun stuff too. So, go ahead, Rob.
Surprising that of all teams who wants to go to San Francisco, where Jimmy Garoppolo is off, obviously coming off of a major injury. We don't know, you know, what his health is going to be at the start of the season or next season. Like, what's the attraction to San Francisco to go play with a team that hasn't really won anything or done anything in quite some time? I'm surprised he's not wanting to go to a contender or a team and help them get over the hump, or a team that's knocking on the door of a championship, or even a team that wins a championship and help them win another one. So I'm very surprised that San Francisco is that team. Like, what is the attraction? I know Shanahan. Not Shanahan. What's the coach there named Andre?
Yeah, that's right.
I did get it right. Kyle Shanahan. I know he's got a history of, being a great offensive coordinator, a great mind offensively. But, I mean, there's no track record of him winning the championship or having a team that's knocking on the door winning the championship. So I'm very surprised that it's that team, where I think there's several other teams he can help and need to help themselves to possibly be in contention for another title as well. So I'm just very surprised that San Francisco, and he made it clear that he wants to play for them badly. And I'm just very surprised. This is not the San Francisco of Joe Montana, Steve Young, Jerry Rice, Ronnie Lott, Wendell Taylor, Russ Grimm. None of those guys on that team anymore.
Come on, man. You know why I'm not super surprised? Because those dudes like to go out there and live in good weather. He can go to San Francisco and run completely amok. And I think that's part of it. He can go out there and he feels like, okay, Garoppolo's a young an up-and-comer. He's got a good tight end in Kittle. Pettis actually didn't play bad this year. And I really feel like he feels like, you know what, not that it's not as much structure, but he won't be reined in as much in Pittsburgh. And AB is just one of those diva wide receivers, dude. He has a tremendous amount of talent, and there will be no love lost as a Bengals fan to see him get out the damn division. But I also feel like that I'm going to California, I can go be me, and I won't have everybody trying to hold me down this whole Pittsburgh steal away and this, that, and the other. And you see some of the discord there, Le'Veon Bell this past year, going into this year, now you got Antonio Brown. So there's something, you know, underneath the hood there that's not 100% right in Pittsburgh. So I hear what you're saying, Rob. He's not going to New England or somewhere where you're like, you know what, he's stepping into a really ready-made situation.
That would be messed up coming to New England.
Yeah, but I'm saying in terms of a contender, if I got a prolific quarterback, a seasoned quarterback, I've got a good coach, I've got a sturdy defense or whatever, I've got a system in place to where I feel like that team and that organization, if I leave Pittsburgh, gives me the best chance to still get a chance at a Super Bowl this upcoming year. And I think that's for most of us, but not all of us think the way Antonio Brown does. Would you be in the damn locker room live streaming to Facebook while Mike Tomlin is in there talking and giving out directions and secrets to the team? Like, That's not something you would do. Some of your rationale, logic that you're putting onto him, off of him, because I just don't think he has that sort of filter. Again, I'm going to the West Coast. I got a young quarterback. I'm going to go somewhere where it's not, you know, I can don't have the reins on me to have in Pittsburgh. So I'm not overly shocked that Antonio Brown is saying that. And he, as somebody that loves to be wanted, San Francisco and some of the players came out and reached out to him on Twitter, and he followed them back and all the other stuff. And they just are doing a good job recruiting. And it's not great. It's not ideal for where he is in his career in terms of getting to the Super Bowl right away. But not overly surprised that he's making that decision, given the way that he's acting, the way he's acting.
Well, is he? Is he more about himself and less about the Super Bowl? You know, maybe he doesn't care about the Super Bowl. Maybe he wants to go to a team like the Niners. If you know, you mentioned, you know, some of those Niner greats, you know, he probably wouldn't want to go and play with them there because he wouldn't be the guy. You know, he wants to be the guy. He wants to be it. So he can go to the Niners and he can pad some stats and, you know, maybe, you know, have those few big seasons or whatever and go out. Maybe he's not about the championships. Maybe he's just about his own numbers and get money, you know, get paid and have all the glory for himself instead of, you know, kind of a team thing. That's my take on it. What do you think, Curtis?
Man, you know, one of my wonders, especially now we got two, my wonder is Ben Roethlisberger. Ben, I'm hearing bad things about Ben. I'm hearing bad things about Ben in the locker room. I'm hearing bad things about Ben outside the locker room, out in the streets. I know he's been throwing teammates under the bus for years. And it's never him. It's always somebody else. And maybe some of these guys in that locker room, you know, Ben is supposed to be, he's a Super Bowl winner. He's a Hall of Famer. Maybe he's untouchable. But maybe I don't want to be around somebody that's going to throw me underneath the bus. Maybe I don't want to be around an a-hole that's supposed to be the face of my franchise. Get me out of here.
All right.
Wow. Maybe you just want to go on back to Cali. Go on back to Cali.
Oh, this guy.
Yeah.
That's the lifestyle he wants. You've been hearing that LL Cool J song in his head.
You know what that sound is, Rob? 2 minutes, man. We've been flying here, man. So what's up, the OT4 show?
2 minute warning, people. We'd like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to our live portion of our show yet again tonight. We still got a lot more to go. We've been ready to go to our OT portion. Unfortunately, we can't give you this portion of our show live. Click on the same link on tomorrow and get the rest of the show. We still have the NFC Championship game preview and predictions coming up. We still have some basketball we're going to get into. Click on the same link on tomorrow to get the rest of the show. Our next live program, next Tuesday night, a week from tonight, people. January 22nd, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, our friends in Portland and Seattle and Los Angeles and going back to Cali. It's going to be 8 p.m. in California on next week. Good night, people.
Oh, man, I love that. I didn't have to think behind that. I'm going to let you say that. Yeah, I appreciate everyone for coming along and listening to the show. Much appreciated. As always, I'm looking forward to the championship games on Sunday. Hopefully, for the love of God, for everything that's holy, to keep the shit us out. So you give me time, baby. I love it. But we'll see. If you take it, I'll look later. Hey, Big Mike, saying what's up to everybody. I've been sitting here listening to you. Love y'all.
Guys, sound a little muted. Sound a little. It's always still a blog talk. You sound a little out, too, man. But thanks, Big Mike. Appreciate you guys. Much love, too. So that is what we do. All right, gentlemen, we are officially, wrapping up this, again, live portion of Talking Sports with 12 Men. We are able to get without talking about the Saints here and previewing the next here. I know there's a lot of things to talk about, too, regarding Eagles and their effort to get the Saints. But Rob, if you want to do a quick review about that, that's cool. I know we got to talk about the Rams and the Saints and the coaching advantage here because, you know, obviously Sean McVay is the up-and-comer. seems like everyone's trying to find the next Sean McVay. I know with JQ, you know, getting Zach Taylor, the quarterback's coach for, you know, quarterback's coach from the Rams, and I know we'll talk about your thoughts for that too. But it's interesting because, you know, if you're a Saints fan, I mean, it's good. It's going to be tough. I mean, you guys definitely have the confidence that you're playing at home. Which Rams team is going to show up, you know, because I thought earlier, because you guys have already beaten them earlier, so what team's going to show up too? So, Rob, I'll let you have the floor, and then we'll let JQ and obviously West Coast here, as we always do. So, go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, you know, when you look at that Eagles-Saints game, obviously the Eagles came out like gangbusters in the first quarter and didn't do anything from the second to the fourth quarter. So, I mean, obviously, if you two different games at one point, so I think if you give the Eagles a grade, you got to give them an incomplete in that game because they started strong but just couldn't do anything else after the first quarter. Then we move on to this football game. As you saw this past week, the Saints came out a little kind of rusty, and obviously they sat a lot of the key players in Week 17. Then he had the bye week. And, you know, I know JQ and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, that sometimes that can be a little dangerous when you rest some of your players. And I think that kind of affected the Saints a little bit. It just took them a little bit to get going. And you know, they dominated the last three quarters of the game. I don't think they're going to come out and start slow against the Rams. I think, you know, they started off slow this past week. That won't happen this upcoming week. And I think the difference, of course, will be, once again, that the Saints are at home in this matchup here. And I think – what it's going to come down to in this matchup is what defense could get the most stops. And I have a little bit more confidence in the Saints defense than I do the Rams defense. So I'm going to go with the Saints yet again in this matchup here. And I'm going to look at 37-21.
That's a surprise.
And Keisha Bynum, we coming.
Score. What was that score again, Rob?
No, you're not. No, you're not.
27-21. Keisha
Bynum,
we coming.
No, you're not.
All right. Not Keisha Bynum. Come on, man. You stupid.
What's the man's name of Atlanta?
That's who Keisha
Bynum.
Keisha Bynum.
Yeah, you know what she said the last couple of days, right?
Yeah. She's been talking a little junk. all I can say is, like I said to start the show, I'm starting to lose my wife here a little bit because, you know, she roots for the Falcons, haven't lived here. But it's hard for me not to root for them. When you get Ginn and Michael Thomas on one side of the ball, you put Lattimore and Hopkins and Von Bell on the other side of the ball, I was like, they got Buckeyes everywhere on that team. Outside of that, you're talking about Drew Brees and Sean Payton. And I totally agree. They had basically 2 weeks off with everybody for something, you know, meaningful to play for. And it's hard to come back in and turn that key on. In the first quarter, it showed up where Philadelphia has been playing for their lives for the past, you know, 7 to 8 weeks. And the Saints have been sitting there getting trying to get healthy and rested. And the Eagles were the more aggressive team in the first quarter. But as it is, when you have a good coach in Sean Payton and a veteran Super Bowl winning quarterback in Drew Brees, they were able to right the ship. That's all you got to do, survive in advance. So I agree with you, Rob. They don't get up to that first quarter against the Rams. I don't feel like they're going to no way to give up 240 yards rushing to Gurley and Anderson in that Superdome. And I'm not sold on Tlaib and Peters. Peters can be is toast. Just let's go ahead and call it. He can be burnt. And Tlaib has to cheat more often than not and hold in order to make his mark. And then he's going to complain about getting called for penalties. Those two guys just kill me. If Ingram can just keep that Rams defensive line, you know, honest with Sue and down in the middle, it doesn't have to be flashy, but 2, 3, 4 yards to make that play action pass still have teeth. I still feel like, the Saints at home, they're going to be playing here in Atlanta at the bench for the Super Bowl. I really think that. I think it's going to be a good game, 28-4 Saints. But no way I take McVay and Goff on the road over Peyton and Breeze in the Dome. Just can't do it.
McVay. Peyton and Breeze undefeated in the playoffs at home. Enough said. You know, we tried to go against Tom Brady at home. Undefeated against Phillip Rivers, and that was a mistake. Yeah, Braves and Peyton and Breeze undefeated at home in the Superdome. Got to go with Saints in this matchup.
Well, no, we don't.
And Keisha Lance Bottoms or whatever your name, we coming.
And we're not going with the Saints. We're going with the Rams. I think the Saints fans are going to be loud and they're going to be cheering and for a while. And then I think the Rams are going to pull it off. I think they're going to be able. I know they're going to be able to run on the Saints defense. They're going to control the line of scrimmage. They're going to score touchdowns. And they're going to put Drew Brees on his back. I think that front four is coming after Brees. And I don't know.
He's one of the best offensive lines in football all season, right?
Well, we're going to see after this game, aren't we? We're going to see after this game. Yeah, we're going to. I remember someone saying that about Alabama versus Clemson. I remember someone saying.
I'm happy Alabama lost.
That's okay, yeah, so am I. No, hey.
Well, I mean, one of the things that happened, though, I want to call him Squeezy, but that's not his name. That tackle of theirs before New Orleans, I heard today that he messed up Achilles' heel. He's out. He's done. The first thing that's got to happen in New Orleans, and he's one of their best offensive linemen. It's going to have to be next man up. And their offensive line has to deal with Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald. This Final Four, we might be seeing the future. We might be seeing the next 6 years of Jared Goff and the Rams and Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs for the next 6 years. So I really think New Orleans knows this. And New Orleans, for Drew Brees, Sean Payton, and this particular group, this is their window. This is their window. And the thing we saw in the last time they won a Super Bowl, what did they do? Coming out in the second half, they gambled. They kicked an onside kick. Got it. What did they do last week against the Philadelphia team to regain momentum? That faith, and boy, did they fake everybody out. Another gamble on that fake punt and got them back in the game and turned the momentum. But I think I'm picking New Orleans because I just think the fans there in New Orleans is ready for another 2010. The fans there are going to make it really tough for Jared Goff not to have his head rattled. And this is their window. This is their chance. And this, for Drew Brees, takes him away from Aaron Rodgers up there in Green Bay. He'll have two Super Bowls. Aaron Rodgers is probably not going to get two Super Bowls.
We'll see. All right. Good call. I think the last thing as we wrap this up, I think it's interesting, is the fact that, Sean Payton used to be that, innovative offensive coordinator guy. And not to say he's not there anymore. It's just interesting because now you probably have that back end. Because now Sean McVay is trying to get that title too, man. So I'm curious to see this matchup because obviously you're going to go with the more experienced guy from both vantage points, from Drew Brees and Sean Payton. So, but like I said, you always got to beware of your opponent too. So it's going to be interesting to see if McVay pulls some tricks out and how he does, man, because he's definitely hot for the moment right now. And losing last year, we'll see if they're going to learn anything from that too. So needless to say, I'm a Rams fan this weekend, and we'll keep it going. Hey, really quickly, let's talk about the Packers coaching hires here. The Packers have made some moves here. And go ahead, Rob, and we'll get into some basketball, if you will, NBA and college. So go ahead, Rob.
Well, I mean, from my perspective, I think the hires that the Packers made were kind of head-scratching to me. when you look at LaFleur, you know, obviously a couple of years ago he was the offensive coordinator for the Rams and maybe helped kickstart Jared Goff's career. He didn't call plays, though. Sean McVay still called the plays for the team. So he goes to Tennessee and be in a lateral move to be the offensive coordinator for the Titans, only because it was an opportunity for him to call plays. And that team was about 18th in the league this year in offense. And then they go out and hire Nathaniel Hackett, offensive coordinator for Jacksonville. That team only lost 7 straight games at the end of the season. They had one of the worst offenses in the league this year. Obviously, you have Blake Bortles at quarterback, and they had a lot to do with that. But both of those hires are kind of head scratches. I mean, they retain Mike Pettine as the defensive coordinator. Not that I have a big issue with that, but the head scratchers are the head coach LaFleur, and then the offensive coordinator hire Nathaniel Hackett. You just have to wonder where the Packers going, and what was that decision all about? To me, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And I take it back. The Titans' offense was 25th ranked. I said 18. That gave them some credit. They were the 25th ranked offense in the NFL this year. Mariota averaged 180.6 yards per game with only 11 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. You didn't see that jump we saw from Jared Goff from year one to year two. We didn't saw a major improvement out of Mariota or Blake Bortles from these two guys.
So my take on it when I saw it is I'm 50-50 on it, to be quite honest. The piece of it that concerns me about it is that you're the Green Bay Packers and you've got Aaron Rodgers as quarterback. I feel like they should have been the first domino to fall to get the marquee name if they wanted to get that guy first. So I hear what you're saying, and I agree. That's why I was a head scratch for me that you go get two guys from two middling offenses. But the flip side of that is we're talking about Marcus Mariota and Blake Bortles. And neither one of those guys have made it. And it could be coaching, and we're going to find out here with Green Bay with those two guys. But it could just be those two guys just aren't those guys. You know what I mean? So you can give them anybody as an offensive coordinator without a ton of weapons on the perimeter, and they don't achieve. And you say, and you blame the offensive coordinators. And, you know, the buck stops with them ultimately. They're supposed to get the best out of those guys. But, you know, you can't get blood. You know, you just can't get it if it's not there to be gotten. So I'm going to reserve judgment and see if those guys can make it work with Aaron Rodgers because he's freaking Aaron Rodgers. But I'm with you in the head scratcher. If you're Green Bay and you're one of the marquee franchises in the NFL and you got one of the, to me, I call it the holy triumvirate in quarterbacks and Aaron Rodgers, the other two being Drew Brees and Tom Brady, if you have that going for you, why do you necessarily have to go reach somewhat for those two guys? What happened with the other marquee guys out on the market to where you couldn't make that work? The Aaron Rodgers not like them, just like it's a good mesh. Like, that's where I struggle with them in terms of a hiring standpoint. But I'm not going to kill it quite yet because, listen, you can't make Blake Bortles be number one than Blake Bortles is. I mean, it's just not a whole lot to be had. And Mariota, we feel like would be that guy with his athleticism, but his passing, his pocket work.
Matt LaFleur as the offensive coordinator also got Derrick Henry the spotlight there several weeks. He changed the offense there. And hey, boys, it's good to talk to y'all again. Let me give my two cents here. The last two coaches that we've hired, three coaches, Holmgren, Sherman, and McCarthy, all were no-name offensive coordinators. McCarthy was the 30th ranked offensive coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers when they hired him in 2006. He was a nobody. But, you know, you hire a guy, if he fits the mold, I'm okay with what they've done with LaFleur. I'm willing to see. I think it's time for a change in Green Bay. Let's see what they got. I think they went young to try to get a guy that can mesh with Aaron Rodgers. We'll see how it goes. I'm not saying it's a surefire win, but at this point it was stale. The offense has been bad for 2 years, and Aaron Rodgers has a lot to do with that for the last year for sure. I know he got injured the year before, But he was off all year this year, and he was making not just bad throws, but he was making bad decisions on third down a lot of times, taking sacks, trying to get big plays where he could pick down, gotten the first down. I feel like the brass in Green Bay probably knows more than I do about football, and probably more than all of us knows about football. So I'm willing to let them just, you know, make the decision, hire the guy that they felt like was the right decision, and we'll see how it goes. I'm not saying it's an A plus. I'm not saying it's a D minus. Hopefully it's more in the A range, B plus, you know, whatever. We'll see how it goes, but we'll see how our GM does with some free agency and drafting here.
Like, yeah, I think the thing that's a little confusing to me is maybe not so much the OC, but when you hire a head coach, it's typically because they just did something great. And when you're this OC coming from a team, I know we're talking about it's a questionable quarterback, but typically it's because they did something great, because they elevated the play of such and such, or this team overachieved because of the coach. It's typically because they did something great, and I just didn't see anything that LaFleur did this past season that elevated him to be a head coach. To me, I didn't see anything great to elevate him from an offensive coordinator to a head coach. And I think that's where the head scratching comes in.
Well, all right. Gentlemen, I love this feedback. And Big Mike, it's always good to have you on board, because I was wondering if you're going to definitely type in whenever we talk about the Packers too, because it's interesting to say the least. So, yeah, man, like you said, you know, you got number 12, Aaron Rodgers, so no one's crying for you totally, but hopefully he'll make a bounce back here if you're a Packers fan as well. Hey, let's talk about some basketball here. Let's get to some really quickly, Rob. We'll talk about some college, and then we'll get to the NBA here, and we'll wrap up the show, obviously. So a couple things, update Florida, Seton Hall, Providence, Marquette, Georgetown. And again, we'll talk about you know, Duke beating Syracuse in overtime. Just that matchup zone continues to be a problem if you are in the ACC too. So go ahead, Rob. Get us started with that.
Yeah, well, you look at the Florida Gators, another tough loss tonight. 3-point loss to Mississippi State, who was having a surprisingly quietly good season. So they dropped the Gators to 9-7. They've had some really tough losses here. And you have to wonder about Michael White, you know, remaining there as the head coach there at Florida. I mean, they had a great game against Tennessee over the weekend. Tennessee's number 3 in the country. They actually had a lead on Tennessee with 6 minutes and 13 minutes to play. The Volunteers went on an 18-5 run that came a double-digit victory on them. So they're losing a lot of games down the stretch, and it's really hurting them. They had another tough, close loss against Mississippi State tonight. Look at Maryland. Obviously, 19-ranked Maryland, you know, with a big win. Obviously, you know, basically, they were struggling in a half-court offense against Wisconsin, but, you know, was able to get to the free-throw line and won a nail-biter, mainly because of the differential and the amount of free-throws they were able to make and getting to the line versus what Wisconsin was able to do. So, obviously, it's a big, big 10 victory for Maryland. And Pittsburgh, I mean, man, Trey McGowan's 30 points. Florida State gave Duke everything they could handle on Saturday, but they just got rolled by Pittsburgh at home. I mean, and Trey McGowan's obviously with 30 points in that matchup to get a big ACC victory for Pittsburgh. Obviously, Providence as well. Big 10 games. I'm sorry, not Big 10, Big East basketball tonight. Providence, another team's been struggling, got their first Big East victory of the season to bring them to 1-3 in the Big East for their victory over Seton Hall. And then, of course, Marquette, a team that's been playing well for most of the season. Marcus Howard, their all-star, went out in the first 3 minutes of the game tonight, but they were still able to get a road victory over Georgetown. Hauser stepped up big time at 31 points, 74-71 road victory for Marquette over Georgetown in that game. Then, of course, anytime you see the Duke Blue Devils lose, it's great for me. And obviously, Cam Reddish, you know, a big key factor, one of the star freshmen, didn't play in the game last night. And, of course, they lost Trey Jones as well. to an injury in that game. Looked like he's going to be out indefinitely as well. So it was hard for them to overcome those losses. And as Andre mentioned, that Syracuse and that defense, that matchup zone, did a tremendous job and pulled out the win over Duke in overtime.
Hey, like the homie JC, I'm running the zone like the 2-3. Man, listen, that is an impressive win to go into Cameron and get that win. And I think you're going to have that with a young team full of freshmen, like you talked about with the injury to Jones. But it's just going to happen. You run into a team that comes in and fires up for you. Most times it doesn't happen when they come into your building and do it, which is even more impressive for Syracuse. But it happens. Those guys are young. I think they'll learn from it. I think it's still going to be a tough out. I think we all still feel like they're going to be a super tough out. And then I'm definitely not going to cry for Duke, but I'm not going to kick any dirt on them. I didn't think they were going to go undefeated. You're going to get some losses. And that matchup 2-3 has been a struggle for teams for decades in Syracuse. So they won't be the first and they won't be the last. So it's still surprising, but good move by Syracuse. And I'm going to try to jump into some more college basketball, but I will own that I have not. So I'm going to let Rob's analysis with the elements just go ahead and go, and y'all take it away, left coast.
Yep, absolutely.
Yep, that's close.
Yeah, Duke's second loss of the season. The first match was a close nail biter to Gonzaga. Back in, I want to say, late November, early December. So second loss of the season, first ACC loss of the season, losing to Syracuse.
Yeah, and out here in the West, our hopes are pinned on Gonzaga. You know, right now, I believe they're fifth. These college teams, gear up and think about what kind of seedings they can get in that tournament. And Gonzaga might be positioning themselves to be in the number one spot out here in the West. What I do know, the Pac-12 basketball, I don't want to say it's horrible, but what a crapshoot. And Oregon State, who I'm trying to figure out who they got. I know they got the coach's son at Oregon State. They're in the conversation of beating these teams that were supposed to be good in the Pac-12 this year. And Oregon State, they haven't been good since Ralph Miller. I throw my hands in the air with college basketball around here. We still got that Nevada. We still got that Gonzaga. I don't think maybe the winner of the Pac-12 would be the only team going in the tournament. It might turn out to be that way.
There's no teams in the Pac-12 that's even ranked in college basketball. That is unbelievable when you think about UCLA, when you think about Oregon, when you think about the Washington Huskies, Arizona Wildcats, and the kind of basketball programs that they've even had. Even the Utah Utes, California Golden Bears, Stanford, none of those teams are ranked. Now, one Pac-12 team is ranked in the top 25 in college basketball. That is unbelievable. But watch out for USC next year. They got one of the top recruiting classes in the country. They are loaded coming in next year.
Rob, already talking about next year. I love it. Hey, all right. Good call on that, too. And, again, a lot of exciting basketball to play there as we get geared up. I know we're excited about March Madness and everything like that. We'll keep it going as well. Hey, guys, let's talk about some NBA here. Thunder at the Hawks. I was kind of dreading this topic at first, but what an amazing thing. I think this goes back to what you guys were saying too earlier, Curtis and Gary. As teams kind of evolve, they start getting better, start getting confidence. You know, the first half of the season, they were getting beat. Now the Hawks turned in, I don't know if the Thunder were hanging out at Magic City or what, but they ended up getting beat by the Hawks pretty handily, which is pretty surprising. But again, you got to give a lot of love to the Hawks. They played well, and they hit some shots, and maybe OKC wasn't ready. So, Rob, what do you think about that, bro?
Yeah, Hawks dropped 45 points in the second quarter and route to a big home victory, 142-126 over Oklahoma City. just pretty much laid it on them. Big blowout victory for the Hawks. Trey Young, a lot of big shots from behind the three-point line in this ball game. And like you said, OKC might have got trapped at one of Atlanta's mini strip, you know, nightclubs.
That's for JQ.
You know, that's what I was going to say. It's that New York, that Atlanta, that Miami, that LA effect. They go in there as the favorite team, and they go in there and they just don't look like they knew they had a game. They look like, what is wrong with my team? Oh, yeah, Magic City, the pony. It was out somewhere cutting and acting a fool, and that's what happens. And they probably, if you look online, they probably sponsored a party at some nightclub and then went out afterwards. So that's the traffic of Atlanta. You know I'm telling the truth, Andre. So
I know you are. That's a funny thing, yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it's not like y'all speaking from experience.
I've been young once, not no more, but I've been young once.
Yeah.
So... And I remember when I used to go out, that you would go out and you would see those flyers about, not about the Hawks player having a party at a club, it would be the opposing team hosting a party at a club.
Patrick Ewing. Patrick Ewing was legendary in Atlanta.
Yeah, you're right. So it's crazy.
Well,
it's
one
crazy
thing about that. Us being young and being young ones, we wasn't young millionaires.
That's true. Except maybe Curtis, but I love it. Just a great game by Hawks. Yeah, I love it, man. Go ahead. Oh, y'all are cracking me up. Hey, let's talk about the really quickly. Rob, if you can briefly talk about the Timberwolves and 76ers, I'll let everyone kind of talk about James Harden 57 point night. And we'll let West Coast kind of wrap it up with Luke Walton as far as his future as the Lakers heads go. Maybe JQ as well, too. So go ahead, Rob, about the 76ers.
Well,
the,
I'll keep it brief with this one. All I need to say is the 76ers scored 83 points in the first half, and they rolled the Timberwolves by 42 points. Obviously, Jimmy Butler going against the former team. Everybody was motivated. Joel Embiid was motivated for them. I mean, 83 points at halftime. Unbelievable performance by the 76ers.
Sweet Jesus, 83? Yeah, I didn't know that. That's ridiculous. But that's
I didn't know that either. Yeah.
That's one of those in-season kind of revenge games, especially for Jimmy Butler playing against the Timberwolves. So he said, listen, we may have some discord happening between the three of us, Simmons and D, but we ain't losing this game tonight. So whatever you got to do, we put that – we put that aside for this evening. Let's go out here and roll. And that's what happened. But good Lord, 83 points is crazy. Yeah, they were super ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, you're talking about Luke Walton, Laker head coach. Look at the iconic Laker head coaches. You know, Pat Riley, Bill Jackson. You put Luke Walton in there too.
Wow.
I would say that.
Not even close.
Really? Yeah, that's right. That's my point exactly. I think that you know they need to be searching for a really good head coach that can. You know, someone that is more like a Phil Jackson type that can just handle all those big personalities, especially with LeBron. Now, LeBron is really, he's a floor coach. So, he's a player coach, I guess I would say. So, maybe they can make it work. I would say if I were Lakers and I'm investing in all these players and you want to make all these moves, this upcoming season, I would also invest in a coach.
Well, the talk on talk radio here in West is, today's game, Luke Walton might be coaching for his job on tonight's game. I'm not really a conspiracy theorist, but LeBron never really wants to be the bad guy. And some of this little bit of an injury he's on, I think he's got a little thing to the side trying to see of his teammate who's got some dog and who can step up and who can be a second to him, who can be a monster. And maybe some of this injury is his way of putting the spotlight on that coach. And LeBron's not going to be looking like the guy that's getting rid of him. But and his little injury is kind of timed perfectly for that to be the case.
Well, then when you also you have a microscope on him with Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson was a perfectionist, you know, on the basketball court. And he's a front office perfectionist, too. And I'm positive that, you know, that they're looking and they're looking at all options. They, you know, L.A. is one of those cities. They want
winners.
They want that title. They want multiple titles. I mean, you know, you go in there, they got them, and they want more. They're greedy. And you know, Magic Johnson, I'm positive, is looking at that and saying, hey, who's out there? Who can we get? Let's win some more rings.
But the person I think they're not gonna get, Harden. And I'm not really a fan. But the interesting thing is they lost Capella. And I'm a fan of Capella.
Yeah.
And the loss of Capella, is that propelling this guy to shoot that much, do that much volume? And you can't beat these guys up anymore. So, you know, and he's built pretty good. So, you know, he's going through people, and he's a master at the way he falls and the way he falls back, drawing those fouls. So he's one of those guys, okay, if I don't make it, I'm going to make somebody think, make a referee think I got fouled, because there's no way I wouldn't have made it if I didn't get fouled.
Hey, good call. Yep. Hey, Will, go ahead.
I mean, well, I just briefly, Harden 57 is ridiculous. The run he's on right now is just something that maybe later we'll appreciate, but until he does it in the playoffs, we're going to put an asterisk by it. But to the Lakers, and you started down the path I was going to go on, and then you kept it to the injury. I'm going to put more of it on LeBron James, and this is why I'm going to say this, and this is the first time you've heard me say this. If you talk about in the preseason coming to L.A., who did he talk about? Who was he amping up? It was Lonzo Ball talking about, yeah, go get him, young king. And he kept amping Lonzo Ball up. And then every once in a while, he would throw Brandon Ingram a little sliver because everybody thinks that Brandon Ingram is going to be that guy. But the one guy that I never really felt like he's wrapped his arms around yet, who you talk about that has that dog in him that I think would want to be his Robin to his Batman, at least for now, is Kyle Kuzma. And I don't think he has done enough to amp Kuzma up and say, hey, young fella, you're going to be the dude. Let's go get it. You can be kind of my Kyrie. You can be that guy. I see it in you. Let's go get these guys. I put some of that, actually a lot of it, on LeBron for not having recognized that yet. The Kuzma's the dude that will go out there and try to take your heart out. He has that streak in him that he wants Lonzo to have, that he wants Brandon Ingram to have. And you can't will that streak into him. Some guys have it, some guys don't. They play different games. But I feel like if he had embraced or still tried to get around to embrace the Kuzma, they could change the dynamic of that team. Because I don't know if you saw the Kuzma tweeted out, know your worth. And everybody was looking like, oh, my God, what does that mean? And it freaked Lakers fans out because we were watching, like, Kuzma's the guy that you guys aren't pushing enough. You keep waiting on Brandon Ingram to be Kevin Durant. You keep waiting on Lonzo Ball to be some better version of Rondo. And they aren't getting there yet. But Kuzma is chomping at the bit. And why are you not, LeBron, putting your arms around him and amping him up and helping to elevate him and then let everybody in fall in behind that? I really feel like if he would start to embrace that some more, you might see some change. But yes, Luke Walton, you can't let your team lose to the freaking Cavaliers. You can't have that happen. You can't lose to the Knicks who lost 10 in a row. You can't let that happen. So some of that is on Luke, but I'm gonna put some of this on the doorstep of LeBron James of you're not recognizing the guy that you need to put your arm around.
Yep. I love it. Hey, we let JQ kind of definitely take the lead with that, being a Lakers fan, if you will, and obviously good call that too. Hey, guys, really quickly, I know we're going to wrap this up. I'm going to let just really quickly, the last topic was talking about, can Denver win the West over Golden State? I'm going to say no, just because, you know, that's my another second team. So I'm going to say no to that immediately. So I'll let you guys – I'll let West Coast say that, JQ, and then Rob, you can do that and then end the show. Unless if you want to also talk about James Harden, if you want to talk about that as well, too. So that's how we're going to wrap it up. Go ahead, guys.
Golden State is the gold standard. Gary said it earlier. Denver's not going to win the West. Gary wants to guarantee Denver's not going to win the West. I want to say that. I want to second that, too. I think what these NBA teams do, they, you know, do whatever they do and be professional to the All-Star break. They get to the All-Star break. I think LeBron's going to be injured, and I think he's going to use that injury as not to play in the All-Star game, and I think he's going to rest that whole week, and I think he's going to come back after the All-Star break, and he's going to try to get them Lakers in the number two spot. But Golden State, and what I think they're doing, I think Golden State's kind of going through the motions. But when they want to and when they feel like they need to, they're going to take your heart out. And that's their MO. And that's probably, you're not going to see that until after the All-Star break when we get closer to the playoff seedings. You're going to see Golden State be Golden State.
And I don't think Golden State is, you know, going to be that far ahead of the rest of the pack. But I think when it comes down to it, you know, those four core players they have, and if they get their, you know, their big fella playing again, you know, or for the first time with them, you know, they're going to be real nasty at the end of this year, and it's going to be tough for anybody in the West to get by them again. Unfortunately, they're that good. They're a team that can coast for a while and still really go into anybody's house and beat them. They know it. Unfortunately, most of the teams that, you know, they've ripped our hearts out, we know it. So, I mean, that's my take on it. I think Denver is a good team. I think they'll be maybe a top four seed. But Golden State is going to win the West. What you guys got?
Go ahead, Rob.
I thought JQ
was going next.
Because Rob's going to end the show.
I can go. I think Golden State wins the West, but I think Denver gets the one seed. But I think Golden State doesn't matter. They can come to your gym and take your heart out, like you said. The reason why I think Denver wins in the one seed is because you have also the specter of DeMarcus Cousins coming back. And it's not that that's a bad thing, but as we see time and time again, it takes time to figure out where a dude likes the ball, whether he likes it on the elbow or lower on the block, and get your spacing together when you're introducing somebody with that kind of talent into the starting lineup, or if he just settles into the rotation somewhere to make that work. And it's not a bad thing. It's just a chemistry and a time thing where it takes time. And yeah, you only got, you know, 35 games after the All-Star break, so to speak, to get it working. So they're going to still be, I think, representing the West. But in terms of getting one seed, Denver playing together now, they've got it clicking. I think they can hold on to it, but having the one seed doesn't mean you beat Golden State when it comes down to it in the playoffs. So that's why I say I feel like Golden State can win the playoffs. I think they will. But I think Denver, just given where everybody is, still wins it. I just think it takes a little time to incorporate DeMarcus Cousins into the flow. And that may take them back a notch before they go forward two notches, so to speak. So that's my take on it.
Yeah, Golden State's still by far the team to beat in the Western Conference. I mean, they sent the message to the Denver Nuggets tonight. Game went close, 142-111. Then Golden State had 51 points at the end of the first quarter in a matchup tonight. When they get it going, they're still just not a team in the league that can compete with them, unfortunately. And, you know, I look at this Denver Nuggets roster here, and to me, I just think they're still overachieving.
And, I mean, they're off to a great start. I just don't see this being a team that can go far, even in the Western Conference playoffs right now. Jokic has been outstanding and actually probably should be in the MVP conversation for the way he's been playing and kind of carrying that ball club this year. But the rest of that roster here, I don't really see much on the rest of it. Jamal Murray has been stepping up, been playing well. Paul Millsap is a solid role player. But I don't see much on that roster when it comes down to playoffs or how many stars you have that can really step up. So I still don't see them as being a team that can threaten the Golden State Warriors, even though they've been having a number one spot in the Western Conference most of this season. I just think when it comes to playoff time, they're not a team that would scare me because they don't have enough weapons, in my opinion. But obviously, from the looks of it, they will be a playoff team. But I just don't see them having much success in the playoffs going forward. That's my two cents. And ladies and gentlemen, we thank you all again for tuning in to another show talking sports with the 12th man. We'll be back on air live on next Tuesday night, the 22nd, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific time. You don't want to miss us. We'll recap the championship game to get you ready for the Super Bowl and whatever else that's happening in the sports world. You don't want to miss our show on next Tuesday night, people. Good night.
Yes, sir. Appreciate everybody listening to the show. I mean, great talk here. I'm getting sad the football's coming here to an end, but we just move into baseball and March Madness and all this good NBA talk that dominates the conversation here moving forward. I appreciate you guys. Y'all have a good night.
Good night, people.
Thank you all for your thoughts and prayers. I appreciate it.
No worries. Absolutely. I hope everything is going good.
Problem.
Yep, absolutely, like you said. All right, gentlemen, again, thank you for sharing the field of battle with you guys, Curtis. Guys, man, we got a big weekend here. We're going to definitely see who's going to be the Super Bowl representatives for both the AFC and the NFC. And, you know, I'm hoping it's, Rams, Chiefs. So we'll see how it plays out, man. So, it's all good, Rob. If it does happen the other way, just spend all your money in Atlanta, man. So we'll take all your money. But anyway,
we coming.
Have
right?
a good time. No, no.
We hope you have a good time.
We coming. Get ready for it.
It's all good. Sean Payton paying folks doing, it's all good. But we're going to have some fun. Guys, have a
we're gonna
great
week.
We're going to
give Marcus Peters a little taste of gumbo. We're going to give some of that special sauce this week, too.
Here we go. We'll talk to you. Hey, I got to end it. JQ, hey, we'll talk soon, bro. Tell your wife, appreciate her, too, man. But anyway, you guys have a great week. Curtis, Gary, Rob, JQ, we'll talk to you guys same time, same channel next week, next Tuesday. Peace out.
Peace. Peace out.
All right. Good night, people.
Later.